Thank you for listening to the Resources for Integrated Care podcast series, addressing menopause and health across the life course for dually eligible women with disability. This podcast is excerpted from a webinar presented live on October 16th, 2023. In this podcast, Dr. Beth Marks, Research Associate Professor in the Department of Disability and Human Development at the University of Illinois Chicago and former president of the National Organization of Nurses with Disabilities, shares about health equity for women with disabilities through future connections, practices, and action.
Thank you all for joining us today. So for today's presentation, I would like to acknowledge and thank my colleague, Dr. Yasmina Sisak, for her thought leadership and advocacy in our work to identify structural and social determinants of health, including ableism, cultural humility that can impact healthcare interactions and universal access to settings-based healthcare and the full continuum of health services for women with disabilities. This full continuum includes essential health services and can range from health promotion, disease prevention, treatment for health-related conditions, rehabilitation, and palliative care. For people with disabilities, attitudes and words matter. So the picture on the right depicts how some wheelchair users feel when they hear the term wheelchair-bound. For many wheelchair users, their wheelchair is the mode of transportation and provides a sense of freedom. So language has really been evolving, particularly in the past several years, and is not a one-size-fits-all. Most people have been taught to use person-first language, and that is where you describe someone as a person first, then specify a disability, such as a person with epilepsy or a person with diabetes. Person-first language is meant to remove stigma, emphasize personhood, and remind us that a person is more than their disability. And today, it's still considered standard etiquette and a safe guess, but increasingly, disabled people don't want to use this type of language, and some people feel that the emphasis of personhood despite a disability contributes to the stigma. So imagine how it would sound to refer to someone as a person with blindness or a person with tallness. So while person first is a neutral way to discuss people, it might not be the best choice. So identity first language puts the descriptor first and is more common among specific disability communities such as the deaf community, so they might prefer deaf person rather than person with deafness. Identity first language is born from the disability pride movement, asserting that disability is nothing to be ashamed of, and for many people it feels like person first language is a sidestep the fact that someone has a disability. For that reason, it really wonders or begs the question if you can truly be seen if you don't acknowledge the disability. So whenever possible, ask a person how they choose to identify it rather than assume. And so as we think about healthcare advocacy among women with disabilities, the Americans with Disabilities Act, or the ADA of 1990, and the Amendment Act of 2008 defines who is covered under the ADA and what we can do to advocate to improve healthcare access for equitable care. And both the ADA and the Amendment Act use a three-pronged definition. An individual with a disability is someone who, one, has a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more major activities, has a history or record of such impairment, or is perceived by others as having such an impairment. And what's great about the ADA is that it shifts our view of disability from a medical model to a social model. With the medical model, healthcare providers often assume that an individual's autonomy is limited because of their disability or impairment and may have limited ability to participate in society. And as we shift to a social model and understanding of the ADA, healthcare providers can think about the impact of the external environment on the problems experienced by women with disability and appreciate how disability is socially constructed oftentimes. With the social model, we can advocate for the removal of social barriers to promote inclusion and social change, leading to improved healthcare. And then with the ADA, we can also identify and dismantle the external and structural and systemic barriers for people rather than solely focusing on curing people's impairments. And with external structural and systemic inequities, they may contribute to disparities in accessing healthcare for people, women with disabilities. A 2023 survey by Lisa Iazzoni and her colleagues reported on responses of 714 U.S. physicians regarding their knowledge about the Americans with Disabilities Act and accommodations for patients with disabilities. Bear in mind, the ADA is 33 years age, so over 70% did not know who determines accommodations, about 68% felt at risk for ADA lawsuits, and more than 35% report little or no knowledge about their legal responsibilities, and about 20% could not identify who pays for needed accommodation. In addition to the need for healthcare providers to understand civil rights for people with disabilities to have reasonable accommodation or changes to policy, practices, procedures to provide equitable or equal access to healthcare facilities and services to appreciate that people with disability are our family, friends, and neighbors, not just people that we think of as others. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, has some excellent infographics, such as the picture in this slide, noting that 1 in 4 adults in the U.S. have some type of disability. Worldwide, according to the World Health Organization, approximately 16% of the global population lives with a disability. Today, medical advances continue to support more people to live long, productive lives with disabilities. And additionally, most people with disabilities have non-apparent disabilities and do not have the visual indicators that we often associate with having a disability. And with additionally, the CDC also report the following population estimates for people with disabilities. So again, thinking about people with disabilities as our friends, family, neighbors, and patient, the people with disabilities consist of people who have difficulty walking, climbing stairs, about 12% of people, serious difficulty concentrating, remembering, or making decisions, difficulty doing errands alone, 7%, deafness or serious hearing affects about 6%, blindness or serious difficulty seeing about 5%, and difficulty dressing or bathing about 4%. So a disability really impacts all of us. And as we think about people with disabilities, one thing as our family, friends, and patients and neighbors, we can incorporate the legal and social changes. And this slide is really meant to just be kind of an overview or a snapshot of the various laws and policy changes that have provided significant changes. And it's a good one to refer back to in thinking about how dramatic the lives of people with disabilities have, the changes in terms of being able to live, learn, work, play, and love in their own community, starting with Title V in 1935, which gave access to medical care. Several decades later, we had the first civil rights protection from the Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 73, and the right to education for all, renamed IDEA, Individual with Disability Education Act, in 2004. And then moving forward to 1990 with the ADA and then the 2008 Amendment Act, both of those sought to broaden the agencies and businesses to include compliance among both public and private entities for non-discrimination and accessibility provisions. So you can kind of see from the landscape changes, we really have moved from helping people to live, to where they live, learn, work, play, and love. So we move forward to 2014, and this was kind of a big one that went by fairly unnoticed, but it was a 7% rule with the Office of Federal Contract and Compliance in Section 503 of the Rehab Act of 73, and that was meant to ensure that 7% of any employer who had federal contract, that they had to have 7% of their workforce. This is an aspirational, so there's a lot of debate as to whether it really meant anything. I think it did mean something, but that's debatable. In 2021, Biden aimed to ensure that diversity, equity, and inclusion initiative extended to accessibility to increase employment for people with disabilities through both executive orders in early 2001. I'm sorry, 2021. And then the most exciting one came on September 26th, which was about the 50-year anniversary of the Rehab Act. And this was a designation by the National Institute of Minority Health and Health Disparities to include people with disabilities as a population with health disparities. This was a major step toward any effort to improve access to health care and health outcome for all people with disability, and really fits in with today's theme. So as you can see with the images, people with disabilities have really been at the forefront of all social and legal landscape changes around the world. Joe Shapiro, 93 Book of No Pity, really provides a rich history of how people with disabilities forged a new civil right worth a read. And then additionally, the first U.S.-based disability pride parade was held in Chicago in 2004, led by an amazing colleague and disability rights advocate, Sarah Triano, who noted that disability is a natural and beautiful part of human diversity, which sums up the impact of all the legal and social changes, and I hope sets the precedent for today's talk about why we need to do a better job in healthcare. And one of the things that happened during COVID was that many people early on, within weeks, saw how quickly healthcare policies were made to deny care for them. This served to push the disability community for more public action to unmask healthcare ableism and to convey how ableism in healthcare impacts their care. Ableism starts with an attitude that people with disabilities are intrinsically less than, rooted in the assumption that people with disability require fixing, and defines people by their disability. Like racism, sexism, ageism, ableism classifies entire groups of people as less than and includes harmful stereotypes, misconceptions, and generalization. Discrimination experienced by people with disabilities is often seen as a social etiquette or common sense versus a social justice or equity issue. Providers consciously have good intentions, positive attitude, but more recent research indicates pervasive, implicitly negative attitude by providers. This has shown the need to improve cultural humility and equitable health outcomes is really demonstrated by a survey that was done in 2020, reporting that almost 84% of healthcare professionals implicitly preferred people without disability. The study supports other work documenting views among healthcare professionals that individuals with disabilities may have lower quality of life or just might be unwell as a result of their disability. The impact of these attitudes depicts another nice infographic from the CDC. About 1 in 4 adults with disabilities don't have a usual healthcare provider. 1 in 5 have unmet healthcare needs because of the cost of healthcare in the past year. And then 1 in 4 did not have routine checkups in the past year. These stats highlight the importance of today's webinar. So if we can support healthcare providers to dismantle structural and social barriers in healthcare, women can more readily access equitable health care, which often presents as repeated lifelong challenges for many women. Unfortunately, women are often on their own in obtaining health care and may be denied care due to outdated attitudes. People who are born with a disability or acquire a disability often don't share their disability identity with family and support, which adds to the challenges. There's no roadmap as to how you gain and access your civil rights. We also need more role models, including disabled healthcare professionals, to model advocacy skills, teach strategies to navigate access to disability legal and civil rights, and demonstrate the value of having a disability and how disability history can be a source of pride. Along with disparate health outcomes, women with disabilities may also experience a concept called weathering. More studies are talking about weathering, but we often don't include people with disabilities. So weathering for women with disabilities can be experienced as a chronic stress-related biological process, increasing their vulnerability with earlier onset and more chronic diseases, which is magnified among women with multiple underserved identities and disabilities, especially people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And women with disabilities are more likely than their peers to have chronic conditions, peers without disabilities. Additionally, compared to women without disabilities, women with disabilities experience less healthcare access, more intimate partner violence, sexual violence, physical violence, stalking, psychological aggression, control of reproductive sexual health, access to women's shelters. Many of the screeners out there will not pick up the unique features that women with disabilities experience in relation to violence. Low rates of breast and cervical cancer screening, higher rates of breast cancer mortality, especially among women with circulatory or respiratory conditions. Mental distress is more common in disabled women, especially people who are experiencing poverty, unemployment, and unmet health care needs due to cost, and then unfortunately earlier death as well. So as we think about the so what can we do to improve health outcomes for women with disabilities? Plans and providers can support dually eligible women in living longer with new health conditions and health care needs in the context with significant disparities in health care and health outcomes due to structural social determinants of health by working to change attitudes and expectations about living meaningful lives with disabilities, supporting women's access to shared experiences with other women or role models with disabilities, and understand that multiple chronic conditions is an underaddressed issue for people with different types of disabilities. As seen in another good CDC infographic, people with disabilities experience higher rates of obesity, more likely to smoke, have heart disease, have diabetes when compared to their non-disabled peers. Treating comorbidity. So healthcare plans and providers can address complex health conditions by focusing on disability-related care. Two things that we really have to think about is avoid diagnostic overshadowing, which is the assumption that an individual's symptoms are due to their disability. Diagnostic overshadowing may be more of a concern with poorly managed multiple chronic conditions like high cholesterol, chronic condition, hypertension or high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, obesity, and mental health concerns. And then the second thing is completing screening tests regularly or on the usual time schedule. Undetected health issues can be due to lack of screening and prevention for vision, oral health, hearing, mental health, fitness, and cancer, and all of those are woefully underfunded, but really would have a big impact on health outcomes. Thinking about improving healthcare access. So what can we do with our plans and providers? Well, a couple of things. Ensure accessible healthcare spaces, considering buildings, practices, equipment, communication, make sure people can get in, move out, structural barriers, through a lens of accessibility. One of the big things is exam tables. We've had some awesome accessible exam tables since the 80s. I'm not sure why these still are not the default, but it really would increase access for everyone, not just people who are wheelchair users. So that would be a huge change. Educate clinicians about the care of people with disabilities in person first, identity first language. Also think about strategies to improve health literacy. We often think about what can providers do, what can healthcare systems do, but we really need to think about how do we engage people in their care. Appropriate care is dependent upon people being able to communicate signs and symptoms of emerging healthcare concerns. Many people might benefit from learning strategies to effectively communicate this information with the providers, and especially people who have disabilities. Improving access and uptake of preventive services. So women with disabilities exist across many communities experiencing inequities related to race, gender, ethnicity, sexual orientation, and age. Healthcare plans can ensure screening tools such as the American Academy of Family Practitioners. I really like the Everyone project that includes the Neighborhood Navigator, which can assess and discuss and include strategies to address structural social determinants of health. I'll talk about that in a minute. And then the second thing is universal design and accessible communication strategy to enable health systems to welcome women across all communities. Universal design refers to the practice of intentionally designing spaces and materials to best support accessibility needs of many people with diverse needs. And I always say one of the best, easiest things you can do is say, hello, how are you? How can we best support you today? And do you need any accommodation? So that can open up lots of doors. And then policies to improve health equity. So what can health plans do? They can ensure compliance with the ADA And the Amendment Act of 2008 provides equitable reimbursement to providers and help providers really understand what their responsibilities are and how they can pay for it and other avenues that they can get more reimbursement for people with disabilities, avoid inequitable discharge of people with disabilities from their practices, provide interprofessional education to eliminate bias and reluctance to care for people with disabilities. Some awesome pilot going on. We have one at University of Illinois Chicago. I'm happy to talk about it offline. That includes dentistry, nursing, pharmacy, and people with disabilities, expand and also addresses social determinants of health and moving toward a social model approach. Expand beyond a medicalized view of disability as an inherently negative trait to view disability as a marker of diversity, and then provide information on respectful interactions for everyone. Advocate, as I mentioned, a lot of disabilities are non-apparent, so you really just want to have accessible communication that works for all. And then advocate for disability-friendly expressions as well. Health plans can take the following steps to access structural and social address structural and social determinants of health, looking at attitudinal, physical, communication, social, financial, transportation, and policy-based barriers, ensure compliance, and make sure that people participate in disability education and training programs to understand legal and civil rights for women with disabilities, improve clinical knowledge, care for women, including assessment skills, that to properly examine, including sexual history, violence, reproductive preferences, pregnancy intention, and preventive health, and then practicing person-centered care across all healthcare encounters, and then reduce structural barriers. And then moving upstream to address social structural determinants of health. So this is becoming more common with larger health systems to look at those determinants of health to make sure that people can adequately access treatment for their downstream healthcare or whatever their immediate healthcare needs are. So as you move upstream, you're looking at where people live, where they work, and how those can interfere or support the ability to access care to the upstream and look at the structural factors to support health equity. And as I mentioned before, the American Academy, they have this nice questionnaire, it's short, that looks at assessing housing, food, utilities, all the things that can interfere with treatment. Love the questionnaire, better to have people answer it for themselves, they're more likely to be honest. And also they have this awesome online interactive neighborhood navigator. You plug in a zip code and it pulls up all the things I just mentioned in terms of housing, food, resources. So it allows for a very quick teachable moment to make sure that people have their midstream, upstream social determinants of health addressed so that they can do their treatment downstream. And then the last thing has to do for the last slide, Nikki, is provide provider-patient concordance. And back to the cultural humility. Unfortunately, we've looked at racial ethnic minorities for that provider-patient concordance. We've not done a good job or really much of a job of making sure that we recruit and employ healthcare professionals with disabilities. In nursing, which is my profession, we really have no idea how many students have disabilities in medical school. It's less than 5%. When you look at the labor statistics, overall, people with disabilities account for 38% in the workforce compared to 77%. So it's still pretty dismal employment statistic. But for sure, as healthcare professionals and with plans, we need to really start pushing for healthcare providers to help create a new vision and future to learn about disability advocacy, identity, and pride, encourage healthcare providers with disabilities to offer their unique perspectives and skills. And in this way, we will enhance appropriate culture and language in providing healthcare, improve individual involvement and satisfaction, which has been shown in other communities that have disparate health outcomes, and then finally achieve equitable healthcare and health outcomes. And for this, after this, and one last comment, with all of the, we can really do a better job with that user's manual to help people navigate a really complex system.
Thank you for listening. This podcast is presented by the Lewin Group and is supported through the Medicare-Medicaid Coordination Office at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. MMCO is dedicated to helping beneficiaries enrolled in Medicare and Medicaid have access to seamless, high-quality healthcare that includes the full range of covered services in both programs. To support providers in their efforts to deliver more integrated, coordinated care, MMCO is developing technical assistance and actionable tools based on successful innovations and care models. To learn more about current efforts and resources, please visit our website, www.resourcesforintegratedcare.com. You can also find us on Twitter. Our handle is @integrate_care, or follow Resources for Integrated Care on LinkedIn to stay up to date with our recent products and technical assistance.